You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything that on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Peace, family. Hope everything is well with you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, needed to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope that the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, you got it done anyway. That doesn't stop you. You always get it done. And because of that, we honor and respect you and appreciate you for that tenacity, for that willingness to don't put stuff off, get it done. Don't procrastination. Ashe. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, there you can always go to the archives. And I know my brother Kwaku just put two programs up, one with Baba Baruti and one with Dr. Umar Johnson. So if you go to timeforanawakening.com and you'll scroll down and you'll see, you'll see the picture of Baba Baruti and Umar Johnson, because usually that logo, the red, black, and green lion with Africa imposed, that's the program, African Perspectives. So check us out. Other programs on Time for an Awakening Media. Monday, this evening from 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming out of Philadelphia. Right after Acres of Diamonds is Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. Wednesday, also from 8 to 10, Revive with Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, her program, Revive. And then on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., that's right, brothers and sisters, it is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an awakening from 8 on. And Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, it's Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., no, it ain't me. It is Sister POC and her program, once again, Revive. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. 3-2. Other announcements? We Buy Black. WeBuyBlack.com. Go online. Get everything you need from We Buy Black from WeBuyBlack.com, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses. In fact, I saw a piece where the brother from WeBuyBlack.com was trying to raise some money to have a supermarket here in the Atlanta area. He's located here in the Atlanta area. He has a kiosk. They do have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall here in Atlanta. So if you're in the area, check out WeBuyBlack.com in the Greenbrier Mall. They have, and everything that is sold by WeBuyBlack.com. It's produced by us. That's right. The laundry detergents, the razors, the ointments, all soaps, whatever. Produced by WeBuyBlack.com. Check it out. Africa for the Africans. Africa for the Africans. My good brother, Bomani Tahembe. AfricaForTheAfricans.org. He is about to take our people once again in this May, and you can be a part of that trip. He's going to Ghana May 22nd to June 4th, only $3,700. Give him a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. And go to the website. I'm quite sure there'll be plenty of information there for you. And if you want to check out photos from previous tours, the most latest and even ones years ago, because he's been doing it a good long time, over 10 years. Facebook.com/Bomani. You want to see videos? YouTube.com/Bomani2007. So check out Brother Bomani Tahembe. Also, too, he has two other tours that are upcoming. He's going to South Africa, November 22nd to December 2nd. He's going to Johannesburg and Cape Town. And then at the end of the year, around the so-called holiday time, he's going back to Ghana, December 24th to January 4th. So check out AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Shrine of the Black Madonna. We're talking about books. They have books, but they have so much more at the Shrine of the Black Madonna, located in the West End, 946 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard. The phone number to call is 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676. They have furniture. They have clothing. They have artwork. They have the red, black, and green shoes. They have all the things you need. In fact, they have a class every Saturday, Know Thyself, the history class. Every Saturday, free and open to the public, 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. Brother Olatunji is our instructor and guide. But if you can't do that, but you like the information, you can get the American African History Multimedia Library. You will have in that library over 15,000 video files, over 15,000 images, over 40,000 audio files, and over 2,000 books. You will have, brothers and sisters, 4.5 terabytes of African enlightenment. So you can call them and inquire about that and what that takes. So the Shrine of the Black Madonna, another place for books here in Atlanta. I don't know about your city. I don't know where you are. Hope you have a bookstore. I know a lot of places don't. Milwaukee doesn't have a bookstore anymore. American African bookstore, that is. You know, Sister Carla, she closed her door, I think now 2 years ago. But there's a bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall right by We Buy Black. That's right, right by We Buy Black. Their kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall. Then right next to there is the Medu bookstore. The Medu bookstore. Medu means writing. Medu. In Kemetic or Egypt, it's Medu, then is another word, Netcher. Netcher means God. The Medu Netcher, that is what the Greeks call hieroglyphs because they were spiritual writing, power writing, divine speech, the Medu Netcher. So the Medu bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, check them out. If they don't have the book that you are seeking, they will get it for you. Believe me, they will. They've done it for me. Also, another bookstore is my good friend, Kazinde Ajamu, Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore, located in Lithonia. The number to call there is 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. The Medu, the Black Dot, because there is light in the Black Dot. Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Go online to Us Lifting Us. This week, we will have our ULU conference here in Atlanta. The ULU conference will be here in Atlanta this week. That's right. We have a lot of things planned. And of course, we'll start off Friday at our cafe, Cafe Ulu, located 2036 Sylvan Road. They're closed on Mondays, but from Tuesday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and we have coffee. That's right. We have coffee. We have Cameroon Boyo, which is my favorite. You should try to get some, I'm telling you, if you're a coffee drinker, and you're a black coffee drinker especially. Tanzanian, Kenya, Ethiopia, where coffee was originated. We had some Rwandan. Oh, man, I'm telling you, we have other cultures, other nations, you know, that are coffee growers in Brazil and Panama. We have Nicaraguan. Papua New Guinea. We've had a lot of coffee. But we also, everything at Cafe Ulu is produced by us. The potato chips we have is produced by a brother and his two daughters. Symphony potato chips made here in Atlanta. The loose teas we have, that are delicious. The hibiscus ginger tea is just outstanding. So check out Cafe Ulu, okay? And check out us this weekend. We have our conference because you may be a member. So go online. Go online to Cafe Ulu, CFEULU.com or usliftingus.com. Also sold at Cafe Ulu, and I had some yesterday because yesterday, Bayina Bello, Dr. Bayina Bello, if you haven't checked this sister out, if you have the 1804 documentary on the Haitian Revolution, she's in it. She's a sister with a beautiful gray fro. If you go online to YouTube, put in Dr. Bello, B-E-L-L-O, Bayina Bello, and some good pieces that she's had there. She's a strong sister, beautiful sister. And so yesterday she was at Cafe Ulu. We had a nice crowd and a lot of good information on the Haitian Revolution, on us, period, in our struggle. So check out Cafe Ulu. Akhavan Institute, they celebrated their 20th anniversary a couple weeks ago. But I'm going to always mention them because I hope that as you hear me, that you will understand that this is an institute that needs to be supported because it is truly independent and is truly about educating our children. Akhavan Institute, you can write a check, money order, cashier's check, whatever, to Akhavan Institute, A-K-O-B-E-N, Akhavan. P.O. Box 10786, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. But if you want to use PayPal and Cash App, you can use Sister Yabaruti, Baba Baruti's wife, Yabaruti. PayPal.me/Akhavan Village. So there's ways that you can make your donations, and believe me, they'll be greatly appreciated and accepted. He had a nice piece that last Saturday, but, you know, the struggle is ongoing. It's continuous, and we need brothers and sisters to help with what's happening with us. Inye Sesim, the daily revolutionary thoughts. Inye Sesim. Of course, I want to apologize about last, I mean, there's nothing I could do. The server was out, so I couldn't broadcast. So you didn't hear me on Friday. Some could argue that was good. I don't know. So we had a long weekend, so we have a lot of daily revolutionary thoughts from the Inye Sesim, but I'm going to pick up March 9th. I know the day is the 11th, so we're going to do 9, 10, and 11. March 9th. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effects that Europe has had on our ability to think victoriously. Dr. Mirma Ani, I'm a marimba. When I taught at Morehouse, a Negro college once declared that I was a psychopathic revolutionary. I said then, as I say now, that I take great pride in such an honor. Today, those bestowing this honor have grown to include homosexualized Africans and their adherent defenders, so-called American African feminists, Marxists and Greeks, pacifists and compromised and frustrated spiritualists, and of course, European intellectuals. Usually the best indicator of whether we are on the right path is a disapproval of those who are upheld what we fight against. Since to be classified sane in the West typifies and testifies to your insanity, then to be called the worst of the insane by European Africans and the like is an ultimate compliment. I say, affirm, I have separated my thought from European thought. Affirm, I have separated my thought from European thought. March 10th. Powerlessness breeds a race of beggars. Kwame Ture and Charles Hamilton. Most Africans in the Western society assume that integration is a two-way process of equal give and take. After all our hard lessons, the melting pot delusion is still alive and well in our community. Too many of us also assume that so-called integration is a positive that we should aspire to. However, integration is not what has happened. What Africans and African culturalism that Europeans have allowed to be absorbed into their culture have assumed a lesser or subordinate importance of status. Therefore, in using the word integration, we must and we may be using the correct dictionary, denotion, but it is incorrect connotation for Africans in Western reality. Instead, we need a term that more appropriately fits this reality. Sub-integration would be a more accurate description because it is a term which includes not only the basic ideal definition of integration, but it also includes the way in which Africans and our cultural aspects are introduced and incorporated into and recognized by the Western culture and society. Be mindful here that we are not speaking of those ancient and traditional African ideas and technologies that were stolen and distorted into the foundations of European thought and behavior, because those Africanisms are not accepted or admitted as African within European cultural thought or society. Affirm, I do not strive to be integrated into that which is inferior. Affirm, I do not strive to be integrated into that which is inferior. March 11. Our work has only begun. Our race must strike the blow if we are to be free. Ida B. Wells. We are at war and have been at war with Europeans and others, aggressors against our children, selves, ancestors, and the spirit of over 4,000 years. And since the battle is still raging, we must defend our children by preparing them to fight with the will and commitment of those Africans who entered the battlefield to engage our enemies from the start. War is waged on every institutional front. We battle our enemies spiritually, intellectually, economically, politically, and in the home. No institution has a monopoly on the battlefield for the sanity and physical safety of the people. Knowing this and knowing that, out of the misdirected thought and fear of retaliation, we have consistently placed every institution before that of the military. We need to reconsider the military's role in our liberation. The military side of our relationship with others who have standing armies, which they readily use in maneuvers against us, should never be subjugated to a drive to attain peace at any cost. We must build our armies and prepare our children to man them. We must prepare them not for the slave mentality that fears death for any reason, but for the liberated mentality which willingly sacrifices its physical existence to ensure the geopolitical, economic, cultural solvency of the seven generations after them. A powerful and dedicated military is a necessary institution and an instrument to this end. Affirm, I am preparing our children for the front lines. Affirm, I am preparing our children for the front lines. We are at war, brothers and sisters. I know many of us don't want to believe that, don't want to deal with that. We're afraid. I understand. But the fact of the matter is,
it is what it is. You know? It is what it is. We are at war. But we are, more importantly, we are at war for the minds of our people. It is a mental situation. We are at war for the minds of our people. One of the things dealing with war is the spoils of war and the retribution of it. One of the things that came to my attention, I mentioned it some time before, is the issue of reparations. Now, for me, I've always advocated that reparations, I never looked at reparations to be paid to individuals. I've said this many times before. There was a editorialist named Charles Cutheimer. And I read this, got to be now easily over 30 years ago. Easily over 30 years ago. Charles Cutheimer, who was a conservative, and he said we should pay Africans. Well, he didn't say that. Probably said Negroes. Probably used a more derogatory term. Maybe said blacks. American blacks. So we should pay them reparations. We'll just throw out a number. 40,000 a family, 20,000 individual, whatever. We should pay them reparations. We gave them welfare. We gave them affirmative action. We gave them all kinds of programs and set-asides, and yet still, we should pay them reparations. Because really, in the mind that they are in right now, we were given that money, and you know what that program would be like? A stimulus package for our economy. Because these folks would not pull those monies together. They would not pull those monies together to build institutions and build businesses and so forth. No, they'll go out and buy Cadillacs. They'll go out and buy clothing. In fact, there'll be a reparation sale so they can spend money. They'll stimulate the, and they won't spend it with each other. No, no, no. They will spend it in the malls, not at Greenbrier. They'll go out to the big mall, the Lenox Mall, and all that kind of stuff, you know. Yeah. Because now once we've done that, they can shut the hell up. And anything that we do, we can do. And it will be incumbent upon individuals to bring their case. If they got somebody to corroborate it, so be it. But we can do what the hell we want to do because now we done paid them off. That's right. Reparations. You know, I've always looked at, not always, of course, but in my maturing and aging and reading and networking and so forth, I looked at reparations for African people as a Pan-Africanist. I looked at reparations from the continent to the diaspora, because Europeans, Europe is what it is because of the exploitation of African people. Europeans are here. This is, you know, you call these crackers Americans. No, they're Europeans. They're Caucasians. That's who they are. They came from there and they took this. They took the whole Western Hemisphere. They took the Caribbean, Central and South America, North America, Canada, Europeans, the French, the British, the Spanish, Caucasians. So, you know, today I'm going to talk about ADOS. I am not an advocate for ADOS. I am an advocate for reparations. But I have problems with, number one, I have problems with their name. You know, but number two, just like I saw a piece on Jamaica and the Rastafari, the Rastafarians were not asking for reparations for Jamaica. They were asking United Kingdom, Britain, for reparations for the Rastafari. Personally, going for reparations from an entity that collectively came on us, then we need a collective solution. That's why I have a problem with ADOS, ADOS, because ADOS is seeking reparations only for American Africans. Only. Just like the Rastafari in Jamaica were seeking reparations from United Kingdom for Rastafari, not just for Jamaicans. See, my contention is we seek reparations, which is repair, from the continent and throughout the diaspora. Because what we want to do is to reestablish ourselves. We want to build institutions. We want to be world players. We don't want to be the pawns. We want to be able to secure our resources, our land. That's what reparations should do. It should repair us. It should put us in a position to control the resources that are under the feet of African people. I only deal with reparations for Africa and in terms of, because listen, brothers and sisters, it is clear in my mind, in my heart, and in my soul, in my very being, that African people should be controlling the continent of Africa. It is our home. It is our heartbeat. That's where we should be. And the reparations should be there to repair the continent of Africa. We should be working with Africans and hopefully making Africans understand, not Nigeria, not Cameroon, not Ghana, not Zimbabwe, but Africa. I understand those countries are important. I understand the cultural groups in those countries are important. But the thinking must be for African people, one Africa, one God, one aim, one destiny. That's what it should be. That's what Patrice Lumumba was talking about. That's what the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey was talking about. That's what Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop was talking about. That's what Patrice Lumumba was talking. That's what I'm telling you. That's the move for African people. That is the move. And it behooves me why we, a lot of us don't see that, because I think that when we talk about reparation, just like ADOS, you know, they're talking about reparations in a sense to repair American Africans for the horror that we went through, but the horror that the people did in Jamaica, in Central and South America, in Panama. There are many places. And, of course, the problems that we have today globally and looking at the continent, how dysfunction things happening on the continent with rogue leadership, men who are just all out theft. I never forget. They said that Mobutu Sese Seko. Now, the Congo is one of the richest mineral wealth countries in Africa, right there in Central Africa, the Congo. And it was called Zaire. Now it's called the Congo again. And Mobutu Sese Seko, who overthrew Milton Obote and ruled the Congo for many years with an iron fist, so to speak. And of course, we remember the rumble in the jungle was held in Zaire. And I look at it that he, you know, when he was finally deposed, he had stolen so much wealth. He was able to provide so much mineral wealth to the Europeans. I'm saying for us, we need, number one, first, internal reparations. That was a phrase coined by a good brother who was killed, who was murdered by the so-called DC sniper, Brother Ken Bridges, and the Matai Network, a very good brother. We worked on Millions for Reparations after the Million Man March. There was a program called Millions for Reparations. And my good brother Conrad World. In fact, I'm going to read a piece from Conrad that I think is very germane to what we're talking about. Oh, I know it is. But Brother Ken Bridges, he said, we need internal reparations, the internal repair that we must. See, that's why as I look at ADOS, they need to understand the internal reparations so they'll have a clear understanding. It's not just finding money. I know the situation is bad. I'm going to go over some of the statistics that they provide, which are, you know, just clear. And they're there. It's a matter of record how bad it is for us. I'll read a little synopsis, too. A little bit of a synopsis of ADOS was started by the Brain Trust of Howard graduate and host of the Breaking Brown political show, Yvette Cornell. And you know Yvette Cornell, she was with Boyce Watkins, Your Black World. She was a constant contributor to that, Yvette Cornell. And UCLA alumnus and attorney Antonio Moore, who hosts the weekly radio program Tone Talks. So ADOS, which stands for American Descendants of Slavery. Telling you, we were not slaves. In fact, in that discussion yesterday with Sister Baina Bello, you know, I made mention because she talked about the resistance that was constant, that were for centuries we resisted. Yes, they brought more and so forth, but we resisted. We fought over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting, let alone all the ones that were not recorded. Resistance. That's not slavery. That's captivity. We were captives. We were imprisoned. Because what does a captive want to do? Run. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master. We did not submit. Yeah, we kind of acquiesced at times. We had to. Out of survival. And in the condition that we were in. But we were not slaves. We were captives. So when I hear American descendants of slavery. See, that's why, you know, this word slavery is constantly in our mind. And even conscious, so-called conscious people call ourselves slaves. When I was in Richmond, Virginia, I went to a program and I was one lady. And I think the lady, she had a level of consciousness. She had on some garb and so forth, but she kept calling us slaves. You know, the slaves. Hell, I seen a cartoon the other day. I was channel surfing, just the one with Bugs Bunny and Yosemite Sam, you know, and he was dressed up like, you know, blackface and so forth, Bugs Bunny. You know, then he came back looking like Lincoln. What's this I hear you beating slaves? The slaves. Lincoln. Lincoln freed the slaves. They brought over slaves. They didn't bring over slaves. They brought over human beings. Put them in captivity. Denied them. And made them work from can't see in the morning to can't see at night. We didn't do that willingly. We did that and understood it was a threat of death. We were not slaves. We were captives. Seeks to reclaim, restore the critical national character of the American African identity and experience, one grounded in our group's unique lineage, and which is central to our continuing struggle for social and economic justice in the United States, of which you will never get. You will never get. In his book, American Captivity, and, you know, as I was saying this to the brothers and sisters yesterday there, I've trained my mind that when I see the word slave, I automatically put captive on it. When I see the word black, I automatically put African or American African, because Africa is the noun. A noun describes a person, place, or thing. So there's a word that goes in front of the noun of that which is being described. So in America, we are American Africans. If we were Africans in Cuba, Cuban Africans, Jamaican Africans, Ghanaian Africans, you understand? You get it?
Yes.
We are Africans. Man, imagine what we could do if we embraced that concept. We are one Africa. You could still be here in the United States and have that kind of courage to be who you are and support what we would do on the continent with other Africans, getting rid of all the despots, getting rid of all the neocolonialists, getting rid of the Chinese, getting rid of all those who exploit African people, and work together. Educate ourselves truly, just as that last piece of the Inyesesim I read about, protecting ourselves. We must build an army, a security force. We must protect. If we're going to stop all the bull and stand out there being real, we got to protect that. We got to defend that. But we also need brothers and sisters who are learned, who are engineers, so we can build roads. We need people with hands and backs, brothers and sisters, to build roads and highways and ports, railroad systems, cities, towns, villages, hospitals, schools, universities. The infrastructure in Africa is deplorable. Yes, there are some places where, you know, in various areas, and in fact, I just read a piece on Rwanda. I mean, you know, we heard about Rwanda and Burundi, and the fight that they were having. Hotel Rwanda, the movie there. I mean, they said it's beautiful. Maybe one day I'll go there. Maybe when I'm living in Africa, maybe they won't take that much to jump on a plane to go there. I don't know. We'll see. In his book, American Captives, American Freedom, the historian Edmund Morgan concludes that slavery was not a contradiction of American freedom, but rather that captivity was the institution that made Caucasian freedom possible. In other words, captivity was not a mistake so much as a precondition for social hierarchy, which requires descendants of captives to remain a bottom caste, to be made to suffer the necessary failures of a brutal economic system. And that's what it is. That's what I'm saying. We keep trying to get this system in itself, capitalism is a terrible system. That's why we talked about being collective, because that's who we are historically, a collective people. This was followed by Jim Crow era that saw the captives become actual cogents that led to the destruction of wealth through federally supported discriminatory practices like redlining. Black presence literally made mean wealth disappeared in communities, all while Caucasians and more recently immigrants enjoy advantages in a land of apparently equal opportunity that was not, in fact, manufactured on the back of African failure. According to Yale historian David Blight, by 1860, there were more than a millionaires living in the lower Mississippi Valley than anywhere else in the United States. In the same year, there are nearly 4 million American Africans who were in servitude, were worth some $3.5 billion, making them the largest single financial asset in the entire United States economy, worth more than all manufacturing and railroads combined. Codified by government, exploited by private sectors, the creation of American African underclass served as a financial engine of a nation that never recognized the debt it owed to the group as a result. As such, the movement is underpinned by the demand for reparative justice, reparations, in making the group whole, and has a necessary component in fulfilling the promise of opportunity from which, by design, these captives have been historically excluded and denied. The truth of American African life is seen nowhere more clearly than the racial wealth gap in this country. And he had some good diagrams. And just, I mean, they talked about the racial wealth gap. It's huge. It's so damn huge, it would take over 230 years before there would be any equality. That means that the Caucasian's wages or his money would be froze, and incrementally over that particular time, we would be continue to go up, 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 and up, because just recently, and I've said this, and I'll say it again, the worst president that this country has had is Ronald Reagan. Him and Margaret Thatcher, just like Trump and Theresa May, are still in that same mindset of dominance and control of the world through Europe and the United States. Ronald Reagan is the one that began to develop that huge gap between those who have, particularly the wealthy and the Caucasians, to those of us who don't. Today, when they talk about the gap and it is so rampant, you know, today, you know, there was a dip for everybody, but Caucasians earn $161,000, and we only household income wealth is about about $100,000+. For us, it's about $10,000. For Latinos, it's about slightly under $10,000. But projected by the year, see, it's almost the year 2020. And so by the year 2020, Latinos have earned more, $1,600, and we have $1,200. But the Caucasian, you know, although he was earning about $110,000, now he's at $122,000. Closing the gap requires a new deal for American Africans. Trump's assertion that during the 2016 presidential campaign that American Africans have nothing to lose was met with defiance by those on the left, but the data supported the statement. From overall wealth levels to home ownership to student loan debts and levels and beyond, American Africans across the nation are suffering. According to the study from Brookings, half of American Africans who are born poor stay poor. Most American African kids who are born in the middle class are downwardly spiraling, downwardly mobile. As a Duke University economist, Dr. Sandy Doherty, and co-founder of this movement, the American Descendants of Slaves, Antonio Moore, along with other researchers, observed in their study what we get wrong about closing this gap. The concentration of us at the bottom economically is a consequence of lack of wealth transfer and multi-generational oppression, not individual agency or cultural patterns. It's by design. It's by design, brothers and sisters. It's by design. And to me, it will never close. Medium household net worth. So, if you have less than a high school diploma, Caucasians still make almost $83,000, but for us, $2,700. If you have high school, $118,000, for us, $6,600. If you have some college, $135,000, for us, $18,000. College, $268,000. Medium household net worth by Caucasians, for us, $70,000. Post-college, $455,000, for us, $141,000. So the Caucasian with the high school diploma, who's making income wealth, household net wealth, $118,000. And we have college. We only make $70,000. Almost $50,000. Let me catch this call before we go to the break, and we will go to a break. And caller 404-404, good morning.
Yeah, Brother Ochi, I hope you hear me.
Hey, I got you. How you doing, Wes?
Yeah, I'm still learning, man. Hey,
we all are.
I'm glad the universe is not opening up for this reparation, because it's bound to happen, man. The ancestors is going to make it happen. As long as we take one step, they take two. I heard some callers on your show. Oh, they not going to give us nothing. They not going to give us nothing, man. You know what I'm saying? But I'm not going to deal with that, man. Hey, look here. I did the research on this 500 years of free labor at $30 million a year. Okay, and then I also checked this out. Just in King Cotton alone, the ones that was in the cotton field, okay, it take working, picking cotton 10 hours a day to make 1 pound of cotton. So just imagine our ancestors in the cotton field. In 10 hours a day in the hot sun, just to make 1 pound of cotton, man. Okay? That right there, that say a lot, man. And see, I'm going to tell you a perfect story, man. See, it's going to take all of us to do the research on our family members. Particularly, I'm in Georgia. And so my thing is, I know I was born in Georgia. My family in Georgia. So my initiative is to go to the Georgia State House with a record of archives.
Mm-hmm.
Get the slaves that was in Georgia and the slave masters plantation and the corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's how I'm looking at it. Because you look at this ALEC bill, what's that? Claim your ground or whatever. They them doing that state by state. Okay? The stand your ground law. So if these devils could do this just state by state, then that's how we got to do this slavery thing, state by state.
Wes, I totally disagree. You know, I'm sorry, brother. I totally disagree. I think the whole issue of reparations is global. It's not the United States.
I know it's global, but you know, what I'm saying is each family member is going to have to research their family, man. Then it's going to be, you do family by family, then it's going to be global. It's international, interplanetary, to tell you the truth. Okay? So I see what you're saying. But see, I see exactly where you're coming back. It's a global thing.
Yeah. To me, you don't do nothing until we all do it. We get into
that's
a position. We do all the research. We get all the information. Right. We all do it. This whole thing with these brothers and sisters, you know, and their idea is saying is that we ain't talking about recent immigrants. You coming from the Caribbean or you coming from Africa. No, they're saying we're talking about American descendants who are in.
Check this out, Brother Ochi.
Okay.
I want to know if you heard the statement from the president of Uganda. You put up, he made a statement, a speech, saying by he apologized for sending his brothers and sisters. Check out my brother from Uganda. Not Uganda. I take that back, from Ghana.
Yep, from Ghana. Yep, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. You saw that?
Oh, yeah. They've done. Hey, listen, they've done that before, man. And then I just seen a piece where I'm not sure who the brother was. Somebody sent it to me, and there's a group of American Africans, and they're praying, and you know, and he's talking about, you know, Jesus Christ, and you know, let me just say this, you know, a lot of it is truly symbolism without substance. What the real substance is for African countries is to establish a right of abode that you can come to this country. If you're a diasporan African, and we will try our best to make sure that all any other impediments are gone so you can become a citizen. And if you want to keep your citizenship in America or in the Caribbean or wherever else that you are from physically, you can do so. Mm-hmm. You know, But
well, let me ask you this right here. Okay. I like what you say. All of us go back over there and rebuild Africa, all the skills we got. But when we do that, do you think we should be getting paid for doing that?
My point is going to be we will. Because, see, you know, when you look at people, with the exception of the indigenous people here, but when you look at the Japanese, when you look at the European Jews, when you look at other people who have received some type of reparations or some type of compensation for wrongs being done, they got those because they became stronger as a people. The Japanese didn't get it right after the Second World War from being interned and so forth and bombs dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima. No, the Japanese got it because the Japanese became world economic players in the 80s. You know, that compensation was dealt to them in the 80s with Ronald Reagan, you know. And of course, right away, European Jews at the Nuremberg trials, once they, you know, the Germans were found guilty of what they had done, you know, and then they were hunting down those Germans, and a lot of those Germans came here, and a lot of them went to South America, and Simon Wiesenthal's series on Institute or whatever, the express purpose of hunting down those men,
right.
You know.
I agree. And that's what we should be doing anyway, man. As soon as somebody, one of these devils take us out, we got to take them out. But look here, man. You said something about Reagan being the worst president, man. I think all of them been.
No,
look here.
I agree, Wes.
George Washington, you know what he did, right?
Right, I agree, Wes. I agree. They're all terrible.
When George Washington talked about he had wooden teeth, hell no. He got a slave.
That was a myth, of course, because no, he didn't. You can't have wooden teeth.
He pulled the teeth from a brother.
Exactly. No, they pulled the teeth out of brothers. They pulled their teeth out, and then they made dentures for him with Africans' teeth, with the captives' teeth. Yes, you're right. But listen, I'm going to go to a break. Wes, you stay with us, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, my brother. All right. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. You will be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Yeah. That is hot. All right, this next poet is from our hometown. He describes himself as a ritual poet, combining elements of drama, chant, and ritual into his work. Ladies and gentlemen, from Brooklyn, I'm proud and honored to present Sekou Sundiata.
It's a little hotter up here than I expected. Thank you. I think all the other poets raised the temperature. Come on and bring on the reparations. Oh, master of the perfect word universe, technological forked tongue, riddle me this. If the Chinese can come from China and the French can come from France, what made you think you could get niggas out of Africa in the first place? Just because you put puppies in the oven, that don't make them biscuits. Reparations on GP. Come on and bring on the reparations. For all the unrequited home runs, brothers be burning up the bases, the crowd be going mad, brothers be crossing over home plate, go outside and can't get a cab. For little Richard teaching the Beatles how to scream like Aunt Jemima without their pancakes. And all the other dark and unknown rockers electrified the republic, sanctified, shaking that Cold War out the booty body politic. Come on and bring on the reparations. For the beat in beatnik, white Negroes and such, getting off up under that great music in them little ass five spots. For the jazz in the jazz age, making your women wiggle and squirm, and you trying to twist and do the worm. Your abstract expressionism jism dripping, you might say, if I was you, I would go on the road and howl too. Jimmy Dean and Elvis, they can go to wherever they went. Marilyn too, except she got caught in a trick and got bent out of that cute little shape she had going. Come on and bring on the reparations. For the Birmingham Gospels, four little girls come Sunday. For the Jesus remix in those redneck streets, fire hose, mad dog, crucifix. And what exactly did you say you was doing at the time of our soft shoe on the rock of edges? For the privilege in your skin, a wounded knee, a trail of tears for the Indian in us. Come on and bring on the reparations. For the spook with the metal detector sitting by your door. Open just enough, probably a moon full of cocaine on the table. Monica on her knees doing secret service. You humming mum under wraps. And what about all those flags we so proudly hailed? Marvin Gaye singing, oh, say, can you see? Wearing shades like mirrors at the All-Star game so you can reflect yourself, relaxed and feeling good. The dark looker doing his looking like he was blind, bearing witness to the whiteness of whiteness, pretending you was the only one who could see. 'Tis after all about thee, just like you like it. Mercy, mercy me, and so on and so forth. For the missing royalty checks, and so on and so forth. For VD in Tuskegee called syphilis, and so on and so forth. Think of it. Think of it as a down payment on the interest compounded. Them 40 acres notwithstanding. That mule notwithstanding. Multiplied, quantized, digitized. What to say about forgiveness between you, huh? And your God. Come on and bring on the reparations.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Other programs here on Time for an Awakening Media today, Monday, from 6 to 8 p.m., Acres of Diamonds. Right after Acres of Diamonds, Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Wednesdays from 8 to 10 also, Revive with Sister POC. On Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening. That's right, with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening, 8 p.m. Friday. And on Saturday, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Bring on the reparations. For sure. Bring on the reparations. So here the brothers, medium household net worth by culture and employment status. So if you're unemployed, still Caucasians got 55,000, we got 1,300. Out of the labor, 75,000, we're 1,700. Full-time employment, 144,000, and us 11. I mean, these statistics, these numbers, and this is from 2014, so that's 5 years ago, but I'm quite sure these numbers have not changed quantitatively or monumentally. Medium household net worth, less than... I mean, this is just, this thing is just so out of whack. It really is, you know. It's even hard to look at these numbers and say these numbers because they're just terribly out of whack. You know, the income, if Caucasians are making $518,000 in that, you know, $120,000 income or more, we barely
scratched the surface at 226, but we show enough, I mean, at the bottom end of it, making 26 to 48,000, Caucasians would go over that at 61,000, and we would only be at 7,600. I mean, medium household net worth, the net worth, home ownership, 239,000 for us, 99,000 home ownership. Non-homeowners, their net worth, 3,700 for us, $120. Oh man, these numbers are pathetic. You know, let's go to the agenda. And they're having a conference, the American Descendants. They're having a conference. It's going to be October 4th and 5th in Louisville, Kentucky at Simmons College. At Simmons College. And I'm not sure, I'm quite sure there's a conference fee, you know. Quite sure there's a conference fee. And the location isn't, they don't have that information here, but it's going to be in Louisville, Kentucky. And let's go to their agenda, because I want to read this article from my good friend, Brother Conrad World, and the articles that he puts out once a week. Has a specific group with specific justice claims. American African movement demands a specific agenda with policy prescriptions that address the losses stemming from the institution of our captivity, Jim Crow, redlining, convict leasing, mass incarceration, and immigration. We demand a new deal for American Africans that includes, but not limited to, we need a set aside for American Africans, not minorities. A throwaway category which includes all groups except Caucasian men. That's a throwaway. Minorities. That categorization has allowed Democrats to use programs like affirmative action as giveaways to all groups in exchange for votes. The bribery must end. That begins with a new designation on the census. And I hate it because I don't want no damn American descendants of slaves. And another for another for African immigrants, wherever they're from. As they say, black immigrants should be barred. Black immigrants should be barred from accessing affirmative action and other set-asides intended for the American descendants of slaves, as should Asians and Latinos and Caucasian women and other, quote, minority groups. In addition, hiring and employment data must be demanded for all businesses receiving tax dollars, incentives, and government support, as well as all government agencies, national, state, and local. It is our belief that this will show that there is a minimal, if any, American African professionals in fields including but not limited to engineering, medical, legal, and technical. Once affirmative action is streamlined, has a program only and specifically for American Africans, the program should be fully reinstituted. The Supreme Court decided wrongly when it gutted the Voting Rights Act a few years ago when Obama was president. That's what happened with why Georgia was able to do what it did in Florida and so forth, because those protections were gutted. And of course, the governor of this state, who just every time I see that man's face, I'm going to slap the. I mean, because you know, and even as Secretary of State, there should be a rule. Because in many organizations, even by so-called, quote, Robert's Rules of Order, you can't run an election and be running for a position. If you're the committee chair to run the election, because he was the Secretary of the State of Georgia, which, of course, he was running the election. And yet he was allowed to run for governor of the election. And he was, shit, you know he gonna win. It's ridiculous. The Supreme Court decided wrongly when they gutted the Voting Rights Act. As the Atlanta Journal-Constitution article stated, it's time to solve the mystery of 100,000 mystery votes. Indicates the protections outlined in the Voting Rights Act are essential to protecting the rights of American Africans. Reinstituting the protections of voting rights is a key part of our agenda. Right. American Africans only receive 1.7% of the $23.9 billion in total SBA loans under Obama. Small Business Administration loans after previously receiving, oh, wow. That is, under George Bush, you got 8.2, but under Obama, you got 1.7. Damn. Yeah, good job, Barack. Succeeding as an entrepreneur requires capital. So our agenda demands that 15% of small business loans be distributed to American African businesses. We seek a multi-billion dollar infrastructure plan targeted for American African communities, including but not limited to the so-called Black Belt, Flint, Michigan. A Reuters examination published in 2016 found 3,000 cities with poison rates higher than Flint. I know Milwaukee's one of them with the poisoning of the water. See what I'm saying? This, you know, Trump and all his minions, all them folks, it's a damn shame that the infrastructure of this country is crumbling while this cracker want to build a wall because it was a campaign promise. And now to do that, he's saying, I'm going to take money away from all social programs to help build this wall. I would hope that the Congress, I know the Senate won't do it because it's controlled by the fools. It's controlled by McConnell and his crew. But hopefully that the Congress, and that will be enough, and then the Supreme Court should. I mean, this is insanity, but hey. As I told my daughter, everything that's happening reassures me why I need to get out. Everything that I'm telling you. Residents of major areas have been poisoned under the federal government, local state government's watch. Such, and not only Flint, Michigan, but Denmark, South Carolina, and others must be financially compensated to begin for the benign neglect of the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, and the government in general. The Justice Department must also institute protections which exceed heavy fines and federal criminal prosecutions for further offenses. Mass incarceration has wreaked havoc on American African families. By some accounts, there are literally more American African males in prison than all women are incarcerated on the planet. There are more American African males in prison than all women are incarcerated on the planet. I can see that. To give context, there are 20 million American African males, and they are largely descendant from captivity. While there are 4 billion women globally, both groups produce the same number of incarcerated. The reinvention of captivity through use of the 13th Amendment is chronicled by Douglas Blackman in his PBS documentary, Slavery by Another Name. A good documentary. Get that documentary, Slavery by Another Name, where he talks about convict leasing. It is our position this must be corrected. We demand an immediate assessment of the numbers of American Africans in prison population at the state and federal level. We also demand that there be a review if punishment, bail amounts, sentence length, amount of time served before parole being leveled at unfairly high levels on American Africans based on gender and race for similar crimes. And we just seen that. We just seen that with Paul Manafort, only got 4 years when he should have got 20 years. And the people like Kwame Kilpatrick and others who have did some bad things too, I ain't saying that they didn't, but they got a hell of a lot more time. We demand that there be real prison reform in the form of investment into counseling, job training, rehabilitation for our incarcerated brothers and sisters. Former President Ronald Reagan committed to strengthening the capacity of historically American African colleges and universities to provide quality education in Executive Order 12320. Obama undermined that commitment with changes to the PLUS loan requirements. We call for legislation to triple the current federal allotment to ACBUs. Schools like Georgetown, built by captives, have an endowment of over $1 billion. This is transferred of wealth from American Africans to Caucasians. Our agenda demands that the federal government fully endow our remaining historically black colleges and universities in a dollar amount that meets the budgetary needs of each institution. In addition, American African students who attend these HEBUs should receive a discount in the form of 75% tax credit. Given that our inability to pay, the rising cost of education is directly tied to the gap, the wealth gap coming from our captivity. American Africans who choose schools outside of that should receive a 50% government funded credit. I'm not going to read all of these. What I'm going to do, I'm going to read Conrad World. But I understand where the brothers and sisters are coming from in this particular move. They don't understand that this is divisive. They don't understand that when you're just saying, I just want this for the of America, any immigrants that came, any, no. And I don't want this for Africa. I just want this for us so we can have some kind of semblance of us being here in America with Caucasians to hopefully narrow that income gap, narrow that wealth gap, narrow the diminish the number of brothers and sisters in cars. So no. No. Just like Kwame Ture, Zogby Carmichael said about Dr. King. Dr. King is trying to use moral persuasion on a people. I mean, that would be good if they had morals, but they don't. What, do you think they got them now? No, they're more entrenched with the mindset of who and what they are. It's not going to happen. Let me take this call. 646-646, good afternoon.
Brother Oshi, what's going on, my good brother?
Jay, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, brother.
Good.
Listen, Ed, you know, we talk about a lot of things, but sometimes I just get the feeling Negroes don't understand this is a white man country and the white man going to do whatever the hell he wants.
That's right.
So you get in the position to have some real power, your black behind just going to have to deal. And for some reason, we just say learned how to really, really deal. Now, here it is with this whole reparations thing. I have no problems with reparations. Do we deserve reparations? No question. But in order to get reparations, you're going to have some sort of power and strength.
Yeah.
Behind.
I agree. I think that's, you know, if you're in a position like that, then you would, but if you still coming to the cracker like a beggar.
There you go. How the hell do you think two Negroes with some other Negroes are going to put any type of damn pressure on the cracker talking about a goddamn vote? Or saying that a goddamn vote is going to be the template for how they're able to put pressure on a damn cracker. It just absolutely amazes me, the thought patterns of some of our people. Then on top of that, they don't even want to unite with other reparation organizations.
Right.
And
I mean,
the other Negroes who are in reparation organizations don't want to unite with them. This is nothing but BS.
Exactly. I mean, you've already
called bald sugar honey iced tea.
Exactly.
It's basically a damn joke, man. You know, now here it is. Now, listen to this. All that this is doing for Antonio Moore and Yvette Cornell is giving them Negroes a little more pennies.
Right, a little more bigger platform. Right.
Remember, I want all y'all to listen to this clearly. They don't have a 501c. They do not have a tax deductible thing in place. So when you give them money, that money going in their damn pockets. You're not getting no receipt to get to the daddy and ask the daddy for some forgiveness for your stupid behind giving them money. So the bottom line is, y'all Negroes are just helping them pay their damn bills.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we at some point in time have to really put into context what we're saying and what we're doing in regards to our so-called liberation here in the hells of America. I mean, you know, it's to the point where some of this sugar, honey, iced tea is silliness.
Mm-hmm.
Just utter silliness, because you haven't gotten the ability yet to think for yourself, to understand that this is a white man's country, and that the white man is going to do whatever the hell he wants to do. And why shouldn't he? Why shouldn't he? Your black behind built the country, and you haven't even placed yourself in the position to hold the bastard accountable for what he's done to you, because you're too busy trying to get closer to his behind.
Right, that's right.
His behind.
Addicted
that's
to white.
Everything he got.
Right, he's addicted to white.
He's like a filthy, no good, murderous, stinking bastard that he is. And you wondering why you in the position you're in? You don't want to be African. You don't want to practice nothing that has to do with Africanness. You don't want to be whole as a people. All you want to do is, as they say, integrate into a burning house madness.
That's right. Listen, let me.
The poor Negro's about something. Yeah. See, let me just say this, Hosey.
Okay.
When a high school student cracker is able to go to jail and do all the things that he do, and this black man or any other person of color does the same thing, and the crack is able to come out, and a brother is able to come out, and they both stay out of trouble for the same period of time, and the crack is in a better position than the brother is over the same period of time, that should tell you something. It's a white man's country, and he has the right to give his brother more than he give your black bond.
And they do it all.
The whole thing about fairness is BS.
Right, because they do it all.
That, Malcolm.
Jay. They do it all the time, and we've been still complaining to this day, and it's ridiculous on our behalf. Let me finish reading this.
But don't do nothing to change the dynamics of it.
No, all we do is beg. All we do is beg. Please, stop it. Stop hurting us. Stop incriminating us. Stop stereotyping us. Stop mass incarcerating us. Stop miseducating us. Stop redlining us.
That's all a Negro do every day of his life. Daddy, don't beat me no more. I'm sorry, Daddy.
Yeah.
What you want me to do, Daddy?
Disappear. They want you to disappear off the face of the damn earth. Let me finish reading this one piece, Jay. Hold on. Okay. Americans have never atoned for its original sin of captivity in the form of reparations. It is our position that H.R. 40 be passed. And understand what H.R. 40 is. H.R. 40 was a bill that was introduced by John Conyers of Michigan way back when. I mean, a long time. To study. It was a study. To study the impact of the servitude of the captivity on American African people. An additional supportive measures implemented. We need to gather the data on the level of wealth that was lost as a direct result of our captivity and the era of Jim Crow that followed. In the paper, 40 Acres and a Mule in the 21st Century, economist Sandy Doherty of Duke University assessed the value today has. If we take a conservative estimate, the number of ex-captives who had attained emancipation at the close of the Civil War, let's say it's 4 million people, 4 million persons. 40 million acres of land valued at $400 million should have been distributed to the captives in 1865. The present value of that sum of money compounded from 1865 at 6%, 5% interest earned, and 1% has the inflation adjustment, would amount to more than $1.3 trillion today. If there are approximately 30 million descendants of enslaved or captive Africans in the United States today, the estimate based on 40 acres yields an allotment of slightly more than $400,000 per recipient. American African demand that there be a real review of direct payments needed to be eligible recipients from gathered data, and progress be made toward making families whole. Without these measures being instituted, American Africans are locked out of the country of our ancestors, built during our chattel captive period. Without reforms through transformative government, we will be left to continue living a third world life in a first world country. Yeah, because that's all you're going to be. But hey, like I said, this is the situation that we're in. My good friend, Brother Conrad World, he writes in the Chicago Crusader. The Chicago Crusader and Dr. Conrad, the title of this article is Why They Owe Us. Day by day, African people in America are becoming more familiar with the concepts of reparations and what is meant and what it means to our continuing struggle in America for self-determination, liberation, independence, and freedom. I say sovereignty. Therefore, we must be clear that reparations means repair for damages inflicted on a people or a nation. In pursuit of this repair, we are conscious of the fact that we must engage in a process and assume responsibility for repairing ourselves, which includes changing the way we think, supporting our own institutions, particularly financial institutions, supporting our families, supporting our own American African business enterprises, cleaning up our communities, and changing the way we relate to and think of each other as a people. These are just a few of the internal repairs that we must constantly work on. In this connection, part of our internal repair is to struggle, fight, mobilize, and organize to demand external reparations from those governments, corporations, and institutions that are responsible for our historical and continued state of oppression. Just as European Jew people proclaim, never forget, American Africans should do no less. We should never forget that they owe us. I repeat, we should never forget that they owe us. Part of our internal repair is to consciously understand that we are owed and that we have a historic responsibility to demand reparations from those forces of Caucasian supremacy, Caucasian extremism. That's better. Those forces of Caucasian extremism that continue to benefit from what they did to us and that lingers on a part of the vestiges of our captivity. As we continue to organize around the issue of reparation, we should be clear that they owe us. They owe us, number one, the transatlantic captive trade. The United Nations World Conference Against Racism declared that the transatlantic captive trade were crimes against humanity. Crimes against humanity have no statute of limitations. I repeat, crimes against humanity have no statute of limitations. The United Nations World Conference Against Racism declared that trade and our captivity were crimes against humanity, and there is no statute of limitation. I had to put emphasis on that. The expropriation of our labor. More than 250 years, we were forced to work for free. Our free labor was a major ingredient in the building of this country and its wealth as a nation. Also, the thousands of Caucasian individuals and their families that accumulated wealth and continue to do so to this day benefited from that labor. Our labor. The code, the captive codes. The captors developed their own codes of which they could be captive, where they could capture African people in America that permeated throughout the emergence of this country. In many ways, informal codes exist to this day, like racial profiling and all of those comparisons of injustice that we've been seeing, particularly sentencing, where Caucasians are getting little or no time. And of course, we're getting big time. Yeah, just us. When you go up in it, it's just us. The destruction of the African family, the transatlantic trade, and captivity had a devastating impact on destroying and dismantling African families. Number five, the raping of African women. Our capture and captivity provided Caucasian men with the power to rape our women and girls by the thousands without reprisal. And men. That's right. Buck breaking. The fugitive laws, when our captive ancestors resisted their captivity and fled, the government of this country sanctioned laws and policies that supported the capture and return of so-called runaways, property. The Dred Scott decision should be consulted to fully understand the implications of this law. Dred Scott decision of 1857, the Supreme Court. And what was the decision? They said that African people have no rights that Caucasians were bound to respect. We never intend to make you citizens. You'll never be a citizen. You have no rights that we are bound to respect. Number seven, the colonizing of our African culture created systems by law and society practice that forbid African people in our captured state to engage in our traditional spiritual and cultural practices. That's for sure. They don't want you playing drums. They don't want you practicing African spirituality. Number eight, the KKK night riders and lynchings. The KKK was established in the late 1860s as a secret society whose mission was to exterminate, by any means necessary, African people in America. They were known to have been responsible for the lynching and murdering of thousands of American African men, women, and children. The 13th and 14th Amendment of this so-called Constitution, which ain't worth the papers damn it printed on, the abolishment of captivity was really a constitutional scam. And the 14th Amendment meant they allegedly made African people citizens, was imposed upon us. We never asked if we wanted to be citizens. We were denied our 40 acres and our mule. We didn't get it. We were sold down the river, and the land was given to Caucasian Confederate soldiers. The Jim Crow laws and policies of this country became the fabric and foundation of American society after the period of Reconstruction. Jim Crow laws and policies reinforced the foundation of European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, and African inferiority in every aspect of society. Number 12, the fighting and dying in imperialistic and European supremacist wars. We fought and died and continue to fight and die for the freedoms of others. And we are denied our own freedoms and civil rights. But yet we fought on all the wars. In fact, right now, if a war broke out and they had to fight in an African country, the brothers and sisters who are in the U.S. military, wherever they are, will go over there and fight. The assassination of our leaders, El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, Malcolm, Dr. King, Freddie Hampton, so many. And of course, other African leaders, Patrice Lumumba, Muammar Gaddafi, COINTELPRO. This was a government program established by the FBI under the direction of J. Edgar Hoover, designed to destroy our movement of the 60s and 70s. The crack epidemic research reveals that the United States government thought through the CIA targeted our community for dispensing of crack cocaine. What's that Caucasian? The San Jose Mercury News, Gary something. Yeah, he exposed that. And of course, that was Reagan, you know, with the Contras and so forth. But anyway, the criminalizing of our youth, it should be obvious that the aim of the prison industrial complex is to criminalize our youth to ensure a young and viable workforce in this multi-billion dollar industry. The jailing of our freedom fighters, the incarceration of freedom fighters, thus making them political prisoners. 18 and 19. Centuries of miseducation and mental atrocities. This has caused serious damage to our people, which continues to cause much mental confusion about our true reality as African people here in America and around the world. No matter how controversial it may be in these economic times, we as African people, the United States of America, we are still owed. Dr. Conrad Wuerl, Professor Emeritus at the Jacob Carruthers Center for Inner City Studies in Chicago. My good friend, Brother Conrad. Yes, they owe us. They owe us that and so much more. So what do you have to? So what do you say, Wes? Wes, are you still there? Okay. So what do you say, Jay?
Hey, Ochi. The bottom line is, we know they owe us. The thing is, what are we going to do to make them pay? In order for that to happen, you have to be able to come together and have something in place to fulfill the promise.
There you go. See, and that's what I'm saying. Jay, that's what I'm saying. Only when African people have some functional unity, not everybody, but those of us, and make a strong claim, because we would return home, we would be doing stuff, we would stay on solid foundation, and now we go after Europe, America, the Spanish, the Portuguese, the British, the Germans. They're here. See, Jay, there's some confusion. And the descendants, this group, has that confusion. You don't go out. See, the United States is Europeans. They're Caucasians. They're Germans. They're Spanish. They're Portuguese. They're Germans. Same people. And so we demand reparations from those people, those countries who were made rich off the exploited labor of us and our mineral wealth.
Yeah, but our people can't, sorry to say, process that type of understanding of who the enemy really is. They don't understand.
Right,
like
you're right.
You just said, all of those other countries played the part in, you know, our captivity and our murder and our death, and they should be held accountable. I mean, if you look at it, the sad thing about us is we always try to be allies with our enemies. And the thing is, sometimes I wonder if we know where the enemy really is. Have we been that totally brainwashed
to not understand Jay,
that a cracker is your enemy?
Well, Jay, anytime a people, and I had to apologize to the elder. I'm an elder myself, but I had to apologize to the elder, and I didn't mean any disrespect. But when he kept using, we are our own worst enemy, you know, that burns me up. Because it's
the same way I felt when you equated Omar Johnson and Baba Baroudi. Same thing.
Okay. Okay.
So I understand clearly your response and your reaction.
I hear you.
Bottom line is this, Oshi. You know, when you have people who talk about things like we have data, we have scholarship, we have this nonsense that Yvette and Tony or them is talking about. The bottom line is, okay, let's say you have those things. What do you have in place to make it do what it do? Are you strong enough to hold those that are, as you are using your reference point, your vote, to stop these other sycophant sick Negroes from giving them their vote? And if they don't give them their vote, what are you having in place to tangibly reward them for not giving them the vote? When things start to happen that are not in their best interest, do you have anything in place to compensate them? See, there's more to this than just talking rhetoric. If you're not organizationally strong, and as one would say, you don't have an army, you're just running your mouth. Yvette Cornell and Antonio Moore don't have an army because their army is the collectively working with others who are dealing with the matters of reparation. Now, a Cobra may have, well, as their spokesperson, but there's thousands of members in that group.
Right. I was a member. I was a member of Mancobra.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, the bottom line is there's members who are not active in things of that nature. But you have to sit down in a room and talk with people. You're talking about having a convention. Okay. So what? Negro's going to show up to the convention. What are you going to feed them? What are the marching orders that you're going to give them? You still, once you leave the convention, is going to be divided from other groups. Because before you had the convention, you didn't sit down with other groups and put forward a platform
and
that they could assist you with. Or even if they don't want to assist you with, keep their mouth shut.
But see, that's the thing, Jay. They came and they stated. They stated. This is only. Jay, let me finish. This is only for. This is only for American Africans. This is not for diaspora Africans. It's not for anybody who came to America, you know, within the last 100-some years as either refugee or an immigrant or whatever. This is only for, as they say, and I hate to even use the damn phrase, American descendants of slaves.
Can I ask you a question? Can I ask you one question, Brother Oshi? What are they going to do with these mixed breed dogs that we have in the family? How are they going to fit into this equation? Answer that. Now, Yvette Cornell, if I'm not mistaken, I think one of her parents is Yoruba.
Could be. Okay. She's a high yellow sister, so that's a possibility.
So I don't know. I may be wrong.
Right. But I don't know either.
What are you going to do with the next 3 months? Are you going to put them in the family?
Well, considering genetically, Africans' genetics or genes are dominant, and European genes are recessive.
Nah, don't play that game, Oshi.
Well,
don't
I'm just saying.
The Negro not smart enough to differentiate. Don't do that. You gotta say anybody that have a white parent
is excluded. Is excluded.
That's why I'm against Dyer. I'm saying no Morados in the group. Now, if you say no Morados in the group, do you know the type of hell that you would call? You know, this is why I'm saying it's all BS, bro.
Yeah.
How are you going to to really go after.
See, that's why. Jay. That's why I've never advocated for reparations for individuals. I've advocated reparations to repair us institutionally, to build institutions so we can prepare ourselves internally. Just because, see, I don't know if you heard me mention, and I think I mentioned before about Charles Kuttheimer in his article of about 30-something years ago. Right. When he said we should give them reparations. Because
don't
after
Don't leave out Pat Buchanan.
Pat Buchanan. That was another ass. Yeah, asshole. But, him. You know, but they're saying that we should give because once we have done that, we've gave them this money. We know we're going to get it back. It'd be like a vacation, like a big stimulus package for the country. They'll generate much in the economy. Number one, they'll be spending money with us because they definitely don't want to spend it with each other. They're not going to pull the money together to build institutions, schools.
Now let me give you a real quick laugh. I was listening yesterday to Ava Mohammed on her radio show.
Okay.
And she had the nerve, you know, to talk her separation of else.
Right.
And talk about the United States government need to give them some land and for 25 years fund the land.
Wait a minute, hold on. You said United States government, she's saying the United States government should give them some land here on this soil for what?
For separation.
Okay.
That's the madness.
Right.
And then give them money after giving them the land for 25 to 30 years.
Okay, so give them money and land. Give them money for about 25 to 30 years. Okay.
Yeah, okay. That's called separation or else. Now, if you are a supposed nation, why can't you just get the land or go buy the land and do the necessary things to build the land and to build your nation if you have so-called foundation? Why are you asking the daddy to give you any damn thing? Because anything the daddy give you, he can take away whenever he feel like it, or the daddy can stop giving it to you. You got thousands of members. Why don't you go set up like old boy Jim Jones did and some of the others do and do what you have to do? See, this is why the whole reparation thing is going to cause issues that hopefully our so-called intellectuals will be able to deal with at some point in time once this whole thing is exposed. The most important thing is that we have to separate ourselves and build our own institutions and protect our institutions and not expect anything from the daddy. Because anything the daddy give you, he can take it away from you. Anything that you build yourself, you are willing to die for and protect it.
Well, you know, Jay, I've attended some Republican New Africa meetings, and I know the Nation of Islam, their feeling of you know, same thing, getting five states or whatever in the southeastern portion of this country. And then, of course, you're going to be sovereign on that land. You know, yeah, I know that. And my contention is that there will never, ever be anybody sovereign on the American soil because Caucasians can't even do it. They can't even do it. But not only that, you are talking about setting up a situation in the midst of a open sworn enemy with a history. As Malcolm said, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Look what these crackers did when we knew all we had was each other. So because of segregation and Jim Crow, all old bull, we came pull our money together. Elaine, Arkansas, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Rosewood.
Stop right there for one second. You know what they never really tell the truth about in those situations that you're talking about? Is that we did defend ourselves. That we did try to fight back.
Yes.
But because of the army.
Yes.
The army.
The federal government, the government of this country.
Had, we wasn't able to defend it. That's the thing that nobody never talks about when they talk about Tulsa and Rosewood and things of that nature. Our people ain't just let them come in there and run roughshod on us.
Jay,
you understand what I'm saying? It was the collectiveness of the white man and the white man coming together that was able to do what they did. Let's start to put that information out there in that narrative. Because, you know, when you talk to a lot of young people, Oshie, and I'm telling you, they don't understand that part of the struggle. They don't understand that part of the story and the importance of that part of the story. All they think and all they know is that we were defeated. You see, that's what we have to change when we talk about Rosewood and Tulsa and all those things, Oshie.
Right. I agree. I agree, Jay. Because, see, this government and all of its institutions is designed to help maintain and sustain the privilege that these crackers have created for themselves at the expense of everybody else.
Better believe it.
And so
that's why I laugh. I laugh when I listen to the Trolley Martins, No Net Martin, and the rest of them talk about 2042 when there's going to be a majority of minorities in this country.
Right.
That don't mean sugar, it honey,
mean,
ice tea.
It don't mean sugar, honey, ice tea.
Go ahead, the power.
Right.
South Africa is the perfect example. All you got to do is look at South Africa. South Africa is the example of what's going to happen in this country if all of these so-called ethnic groups.
Hold on, Jay. Let me read this right quick. I just got this from Conrad. To the leaders of the American descendants of slaves, the ADOS, A-D-O-S, my name is Dr. Conrad Worrell. And I have been an active participant in the reparations movement in this country and throughout the world since 1964. And when I read Malcolm's statement on reparations, I have witnessed the peaks and lulls of the reparations movement over the years. The public conversations on the question of reparations for African people reached a peak en route to the UN World Conference against Racism that was held in Durban, South Africa in August of 2001. And if you remember, there was building back then, but then what happened in 2001 in September, the following month? Exactly, the so-called inside job that 9/11 is. I strongly disagree with your divisive and unhistorical approach to the reparations movement. The current public discussion is not new, but your divisive approach is a new dynamic. The ancestral organizers of the reparations movement will help guide us through this period of the reparations debate and discussion. Your American Descendants of Slaves group is asserting that this is some kind of new development because a few presidential candidates have brought up the idea of reparations for African people, and as a result, it is being discussed in the media. This current media frenzy has happened many times before. Check out the archives. In the public space, elected officials throughout the country have debated and discussed the issue off and on over the years. What is occurring in the current public interaction is not new, but what is new is your divisive approach and tactics to the reparations movement. For real reparations organization, I encourage our people to join and support in COBRA, National Coalition for Blacks for Reparations in America. Conrad Worrell. You know? But listen, Jay. Listen, Jay, go ahead. I only got a minute.
Hey, listen, man, you have a good day, man. And listen, we just have to keep on putting the real information out in regards to this whole reparation thing and keeping a close eye on the Cardells and Antonio Moore, because to be honest, man, they really ain't got it, bruh.
No, of course they don't.
Here with Morrell and the others,
right,
and come together and find some sort of common ground and work with one another for this to happen, all it is going to be is just talk. And in the long run, black people are going to get hurt by it. That's all.
I hear you,
like
brother.
It always happens.
All right, Jay.
And have a good day. I'll talk with you later.
Peace. All right, peace to you, brother. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, I hope you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodio means our victorious destiny. Bibi Fahodio family, peace.